please continue finishing your dessert or your lunch, whichever is the case. But we want to begin with the program. And today, the gentleman who arranged for our speaker is Alan Horton. Alan is a member of the board of the Forum Club and also on the program committee. And he happens to be a vice president of the club, which means that next year he will be chairman of the program committee and will have the responsibility for finding the following year's speakers. So keep names in mind of anybody that you think you can get for his benefit. Alan arranged for our guest speaker today, and he will introduce him to you, Alan Horton.
Thank you, Wally. When our speaker today asked me about this crowd, I thought of Stephen Wright's joke, half the people you know are below average. What I said, however, is that everyone in this crowd is above average, at least when it comes to average age. The students from Everglades City are excepted from that. Maybe I'd better ask you a couple of questions so our speaker will know a little more about this audience. How many of you regularly read the Naples Daily News? Raise your hands. Raise your hand if someone in your household is addicted to HGTV, sometimes called Home and Garden Television, or entranced by Emeril and Friends on the Food Network. A lot of hands. How many of you, when you're up north, watch WWS in Cleveland, or WCPO in Cincinnati, or WXYZ in Detroit?
You do that with Gene.
Well, you're about to meet the man to blame for what you read and watch. His name is Kenneth W. Lowe, President and CEO of the E.W. Scripps Company, the 128-year-old media firm formerly known as Scripps Howard. But this isn't the old newspaper-dominated Scripps Howard most of you have known. This is a company on the move, largely due to its innovative, entrepreneurial, charismatic leader. Last year, Fortune magazine said Scripps was the best of 11 publishing firms in innovation, quality of management, and long-term investment performance. Forbes magazine put Scripps on its list of best-managed media companies and said, quote, Scripps has made a fortuitous habit of anticipating trends in media and information, unquote. Institutional Investors Survey of investors and analysts ranked Scripps number two in the media category for being, quote, shareholder friendly, unquote. Last year, Ken was Fortune magazine's Media Executive of the Year. Later this month, Ken will receive the coveted 2007 Golden Mike Award, presented annually by the Broadcasters Foundation of America. This is a big deal award. By the way, Forum Club Program Committee member Bill Turner was honored in 2004 by the same Broadcasters Foundation as a broadcast pioneer. Bill, will you stand up? There he is. The point I'm trying to make about Ken Lowe is that he has come a long way for a country boy from North Carolina who began his career as a radio DJ. I had a ringside seat in 1994 when the company ponied up what would become about $100 million for Ken, then a Scripps Broadcasting vice president, to start a cable network named HGTV. Today, HGTV, available in more than 90 million U.S. households, and its family of Scripps networks, bring in more than $1 billion annually for Scripps. It's no wonder the board elected Ken Lowe CEO of the entire company in 2000. Since he took over as CEO, Scripps has founded other networks and rushed to the Internet. Now Scripps is one of the top 15 U.S. companies on the web. Do you remember that cell phone TV commercial with the CEO behind the desk ruminating about how to provide better service and lower rates and, quote, stick it to the man? But, says the CEO's aide, you are the man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce you to a CEO who has found that sticking it to the man and pleasing customers can be very lucrative for shareholders, Mr. Ken Lowe.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. And indeed a pleasure to be here. Good afternoon, everyone. It's great to be in a room where I see so many former colleagues and great friends from the state of Ohio, where EW Scripps is based in Cincinnati. And Alan, thank you for those nice comments. I'm probably known best for founding and starting Home and Garden Television, HGTV. And not to be a bit chauvinistic, but for the men in the room, a show of hands of how many of you have a wife, significant other, that actually watches HGTV, and when you come home, she's got a honey-do list of things she's seen on the network. And the conversation usually goes, you know, dear, I saw them do this on HGTV today, and guys will tell me, that's not bad enough. They go on to say, and you can do this in 30 minutes, because that's all the time it took on HGTV for them to do it. I was also recently introduced as the male Martha Stewart. I know Susan Lyon is coming in, and she's a great speaker, but I assure you Martha's probably not impressed that she's compared with me. But it's a nice thing to be associated with a great network like HGTV and the Food Network. And it's so great to be here in February. And I don't need to tell you folks that. I'm preaching to the saved. It's pretty cold and gray back in Cincinnati. And unfortunately for John Fish and before him Corbin and Alan too, they know that this time of year means that they need a dose of corporate wisdom from Cincinnati. And I'm always happy to come down and offer my thoughts. John is way too diplomatic to admit it, but I suspect he dreads this time of year. John, hang on, spring is around the corner. Although he told me last night he thought he'd start a new tradition for Cincinnati-based Scripps corporate execs coming down this time of year. He said there's a great thing that we'd really love to get into, and it's something to do with wrestling alligators hand-to-hand, and he said he'd be glad to take me down and introduce me to it later on today. You know, the truth is we spend a lot of time in Naples because it's such an important community for our company. The Naples Daily News is one of the newspapers in the entire country that truly is a gem. It stands out. It's growing. It really is in terms of readership, of paid circulation, overall financial performance, as well as being widely recognized here in Florida and beyond for editorial excellence, for integrity, and for innovation. You're truly blessed to have such a great newspaper here. A lot of my Ohio neighbors and colleagues who come down for these winter months and then come back to Ohio say the one thing I really miss when I come back up here is the Naples Daily News, and I can understand why. You know, it's often said that if all newspaper markets were like Naples, we wouldn't be hearing today about secular challenges that our publishing industry is facing. I'll explore some of those issues a little more in depth in just a few minutes, but for now, know that we are very proud to be a part of this community, and we have every intention as a company of staying here for a long, long time. Also, I'd like to again thank the Forum Club for inviting me to speak today. I've looked over your membership list, and it's extremely impressive. I've also seen some of your recent speakers, so I feel the pressure today. You've been fortunate to have such an incredible, incredible array of speakers from all walks of life. A lot of horsepower in this room, which makes this organization a tremendous asset to this community. My compliments and sincerest thanks for this opportunity today, and thank you for your leadership. I'm going to focus my comments today on just how we as managers of one of the country's oldest diversified media companies, Scripps is over 130 years old. Alan Horton said 128, but Alan stopped counting when he retired because he didn't think there's... he figured that was the end of the company. I'm gone. How we really view the future of media in this digital age. And it's a topic that we really discuss every day at the EW Scripps Company because we are trying to strive to stay ahead, if you will, of this rapidly changing marketplace. And if I may, let me start with this general observation. We, and I mean all of us, media consumers and purveyors of media alike, are truly the lucky beneficiaries of a totally networked electronic media superstructure that brings the world instantly to our fingertips. We live in an interactive world that not so long ago, it was really hard for us to imagine. Think about it. Pardon me. I was a radio disc jockey, and that's how I got started. And When I got my first job over 30 years ago, fresh out of college, Walter Cronkite was still the most respected man in America. And we had three choices for television entertainment in those days. Remember, CBS, NBC, and ABC. And if the president had something important to say, there was nowhere else to turn. There was no other cable channels around. A lot of us were still listening to AM radio superstations, although if you were really cool, you had an FM converter. Remember those things? You actually put it underneath your car and listened to FM through your AM. Quality wasn't so good, but you were beginning to switch over to FM. And we literally had to go to a movie theater to see a full-length feature film without commercial interruption. Still buying vinyl at the record store. That is, unless you'd invested in an 8-track tape, or better yet, a cassette tape player. Many more of us subscribed in those days and actually read newspapers. And computers, remember computers? My gosh, they were the size of refrigerators, and they'd spit out these reams of green and white paper with those perforated holes on either side, and only the nerdiest of the nerdy geeks could understand what was coming out of them. And if you didn't understand also how to type those cards and put in the codes, you were lost. I don't need to say, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a vastly different world today. We literally can choose from hundreds of television channels. Include some that broadcast news 24 hours a day. My gosh, we've even got a network that's nothing but about food 24 hours a day. Just think, all of us now have home computers, and the internet, which wasn't even in our vocabulary back then, has profoundly and forever changed our lives. VCRs came and went, and guess what? Your DVD player is about to pass into history. Steve Jobs and Apple's have started making a small silver box that will allow you to throw your TV shows and feature-length films wirelessly right to your television screen, that flat-screen plasma maybe that you have on the wall that you got for Christmas. And there's more. In a few months, we'll be watching shows like Desperate Housewives on Apple's new iPhone, which the headline in the Naples Daily News this morning said is the next big thing with a question mark. As 2006 drew to a close, an estimated 10 million people were watching video on one type of mobile device or another. Think about it, 10 million people. As that technology improves, and it certainly will, that number no likely will grow. And as for radio, well, satellite radio is now doing to FM what FM did to AM radio. But it may not matter at all, because we can carry around entire music collections with us on our MP3 players that fit in our wallet or purse. And by the way, it won't be long before you'll be able to do the same thing with your video libraries. The technology is here, it's happening, and it's changing our lives. You get the idea. Advancing digital technologies are constantly also changing the way we consume media, and even more changing our lives on a daily basis. As media consumers, we have more control over what we watch, when we watch, than ever before. What I'm going to do today in the next few minutes is just talk about how these new media technologies are affecting the habits of media consumers and how we as managers of mainstream media companies are responding to these changes. Just a quick survey. How many of you have cell phones? Probably 100% dumb. How many of you have cell phones that have a camera built in? Well, and pretty soon you're not going to have a choice. They're all going to be built in. How many of you have a BlackBerry or a Trio or a PDA? Okay. How about satellite radio, either in your car or at home? How many of you have that? We could go on and on and on. You don't realize sometimes how all of these things accumulate and add up and how they're impacting your life. How many choices you now have in this fragmented world, but last time I checked, we still only have 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Now, specifically today, what I'm going to talk about news and entertainment in the media, and lest we forget, we're really talking about businesses, the changing economics, if you will, that are truly underpinning these enterprises and how they're actually changing our economy. But let me start first by talking about the religious side of the business, and that's Big J journalism. You know, as media consumers, we have come to expect, actually even demand, instant access to breaking news of the day, thanks largely to the ubiquity of the internet, also to high-speed satellite quality feeds and incredible digital video technologies. Now, that is a far cry from back in Walter Cronkite's day, when the concept of immediacy might have included a network news report on the Vietnam War that was actually filmed, not taped, days before it aired. You know, in those days, there weren't any satellite uplinks. There weren't any live reports, actually. There was no Wolf Blitzer, no Situation Room, no Shepard Smith. You couldn't even overnight it by FedEx. Battlefield reporters relied on a cumbersome network of land and air couriers to get raw footage back to the newsrooms in New York, where it was carefully edited and packaged for the nightly news, but usually at least 3 to 4 days old. Today, a news report that's days old is actually ancient history. I don't know about you, but is there any news that's not breaking news now? News cycles have been compressed to the nth degree as print and electronic journalists scramble to meet an insatiable demand for immediate information. Stories are updated by the minute, by news channels, by newspaper websites, by bloggers. So many other sources, it's hard to keep track of it. And you never before was this apparent than in the hurricane coverage of Katrina, where actually the live news teams on the ground there were not only breaking news, they were making news. And in some cases, it was news back to the government in Washington, because the news gathering information that was going on was outpacing the information that was coming back to our capital. And if we're so inclined, we can actually even bypass the news media altogether and go directly to the newsmakers themselves. You want details on Bush's Iraq strategy? Well, the White House website has it posted, complete with a PowerPoint presentation. You want to know what the governments of Iraq or Iran think about it? Well, you can check the English versions of their official websites. Al Jazeera's website is available. Want in-depth analysis and commentary? Well, pick a Beltway think tank. Want the left view? Want the right view? You choose. The days when we, the media, and we alone decide what you, a consumer, read or hear are long gone. And, you know, we talk a lot about disintermediation. The Internet and the world of information that it opens to all of us has tremendously and radically changed the game. You know, one of our editors of one of our papers recently asked me, he said, Ken, do you think we can afford Big J journalism? I think if he means Big J in the true sense of the way it was 20, maybe even 10 years ago, the answer is probably no. The Internet has redefined our notion of what journalism truly is. Now, recently, I was having coffee with Arthur Sulzberger of the New York Times. And he said, in this whole question of journalism, he said, in my household, because my wife and relatives watch the Food Network, if you ask them the definition of journalism, they may say it's programming on the Food Network. It's information I need or I want when I want to cook something. It's also entertaining. It's phenomenal to think that the evolution of our news organization, both print and broadcast, are having to be much more strategic in how they deploy their people and their financial resources. And journalists are really, really having to be better detectives and much better storytellers. Good enough that the value they add to our understanding of the news of the day must rise above the din. It's a tall order. And the pressures on our industry to change are enormous. Unhappy shareholders last year forced the sale of Knight Ridder, a company that no longer exists, and now a bidding auction for the Tribune Company. McClatchy just sold a Minneapolis newspaper a few weeks ago for about half what it paid for just 8 years ago. And maybe you read just yesterday that the New York Times announced that they were writing down the value of the Boston Globe, a paper that they purchased not that many years ago, by hundreds of millions of dollars. There's even been a lot of speculation that Scripps, a company over 130 years old, is getting out of the newspaper business. Well, let me put that one to rest right now. There are no plans to sell, separate, or spend the Scripps newspaper division. But whether our newspapers of the future will be all ink on paper or sophisticated local news and information franchises with a dominant web presence, well, that's for you in the room and media consumers in general to decide. You know, the challenge for us is to adapt as quickly as we can to this new reality without sacrificing our credibility and other fundamental values of journalistic excellence. Trust is a valuable asset and one that I believe we'll be able to leverage to our advantage in the long term, but time will tell. Now let's turn to the entertainment side of the business. There, we're under just as much pressure to deliver quality content for the growing range of consumer electronics that are finding their way into the hands of consumers. You know, it was tough enough creating shows that were worth watching back when there were only three networks on which to watch them. Imagine what it must be like now to create programming. The biggest change today, though, might be the tremendous growth in online video streaming. Thanks truly to the proliferation of high-speed internet services, or broadband as we call it, the quality and ease of access to online video has improved significantly, and media consumers are responding. And that's given rise to internet stars like YouTube, MySpace, which provide a platform to anybody with access to a computer and digital video equipment. So now, media consumers are also programmers, putting themselves in direct competition with us for eyeballs. And how about the guard who recently smuggled in a cell phone and captured Saddam Hussein's hanging and immediately put it on the World Wide Web, bypassing every major news organization? And for two or three days, the amount of click-ons and watch to that video was phenomenal. YouTube's growth this past year has been astounding. In fact, even though YouTube has not made a dime, Google believes and paid $1.6 billion for it. You know, all of the mainstream media companies are rushing now to get their video content on the web on the belief that the internet may very well be the next form of television. Really, no one can afford not to be moving in such a direction, because given the speed at which all this change is happening, it can absolutely have a negative impact on a traditional business model. You know, one of our strategies at Scripps has been to create dedicated broadband channels that burrow down deeper into the categories served by our lifestyle national networks. For example, if you watch HGTV, but you really only like the decorating shows, and we have a broadband channel that you could tune to on your internet and watch on your timetable, why not? But in a way, we're also cannibalizing ourselves. But our theory is, if we don't do it, someone else will do it to us. This year, we've launched video-rich websites that focus on kitchen and bath design, they focus on quilting, they focus on crafts. Half a dozen of these broadband channels are already live. There are more on the way. And the same is true with the Food Network. You know, maybe you're only interested in Italian cooking. Maybe you're only interested in Mexican cooking. Why do you have to watch an entire network when you can get these channels on broadband? Broadband video, just part of the story. There's a whole slew of consumer electronic products on the market that are having an impact on how we as consumers access entertainment. Now, I've already mentioned the iPhone and the new home media centers where you can network your home computer and television wirelessly. TiVos and other digital recording devices have been around for years, making it possible for us to store and watch seasons of our favorite shows at our convenience. How many of you at home have either a TiVo or a PVR where you actually record shows and watch them back later? Just raise your hand. Okay, be honest with me. How many of you skip through the commercials? I always hate asking that question. Well, of course, those commercials is how a company like Scripps makes its money. High-definition television, becoming much more affordable. I bet there are many of you in this room this Sunday who watch the Super Bowl in HD. And you know, once you watch a program in high definition, especially a live sports program, it's kind of tough to go back to the old analog system. Mobile video, which has been very big in Western Europe and Asia for quite a time, is finally coming on strong here in the United States. There's even a product called a Slingbox. I don't know if anybody even in the room have one, that makes it possible for you to watch your home television on a laptop or a video cell phone from wherever in the world you are. And here's the best example I can give you. I was talking recently with a gentleman, lives in California. He happened to be in Europe. He's a big soccer fan. The final day of the World Cup series. Great game, by the way. Great match. He happened to be at 40,000 feet on a Lufthansa jet heading back to the States. And on Lufthansa, they actually have wireless internet in first class. So he popped his computer out, dialed up the high-speed internet wireless, and tapped into his sling box back in his home in California. And by the way, he can change the channels. So he changed it to the channel that was carrying the World Cup soccer, and he's sitting in first class watching the game live over wireless internet. And he said, very soon, most of the first class was up around my seat. We were all watching. Now, there's no telling for certain which of these technological applications are going to be big hits with consumers long term, or which maybe are headed for the 8-track bin. The challenge and the opportunity for media companies, though, is to be nimble enough and creative enough to deliver content that brings to life all these new electronic gadgets. At Scripps, for example, we're absolutely certain that all of our media enterprises, that the content we're creating has to be completely portable and able to go wherever the consumer is going to really bring the third point of today's discussion into focus, and that is the changing economics of our business. You know, looking at it from a purely Scripps perspective, you can get a good understanding of where we in the industry have been and where we're headed. Scripps, as Alan mentioned, got its start as a newspaper company. Old man E.W. Scripps, our founder back in the late 1800s, launched one of the country's first mass media companies by assembling a portfolio of popular newspapers that were actually written and designed with a working class in mind, which up to that point was not necessarily the norm. As a matter of fact, his first paper in Cleveland, Ohio, was called the Penny Press, and it sold for just one penny. But the average working man or woman could now afford a communication piece like a penny press. The Scripps newspapers in EW's day were inexpensive, they were easy to read, and really a great advertising platform for merchants who wanted to reach a whole new generation of new consumers. It was the first move towards mass marketing. As media technologies evolved, so did Scripps. The company launched its own newswire and feature services at the turn of the century. One of our great reporters in our Hall of Fame is Ernie Pyle, the famed World War II reporter. We got into radio very early in the 1920s. We'd exit that business some 60 years later. And we were one of America's first broadcast television pioneers. Alan mentioned WEWS in Cleveland, which is named for E.W. Scripps. It was the first station in Ohio. It was put on the air in the late 1940s. So we have been a pioneer in a lot of media. We got into the cable television business in the 1980s as a system operator. We were one of those companies that would come down the front of your lawn and dig a trench this wide to put a coax cable this big in the ground and then put one of those crooked green boxes in your yard. And then we never return your phone calls when you asked to get service hooked up. But we decided that was not necessarily a business for us going forward. So we shifted strategic directions to concentrate on the programming side of the business. So now, as the internet comes into play, we are fully involved in leveraging powerful interactive content on the web by migrating this content from our media businesses to other platforms. More recently, we've decided to tap the growth potential of internet search by adding two very promising online search and price comparison services to our portfolio of businesses, Shopzilla.com and Uswitch.com. Now, I provided this little history lesson as an illustration. Throughout our history at Scripps, we've been in the business of really creating marketplaces between consumers and merchants, regardless of the media platform. We've been committed as a company to meet the needs and demands of both media consumers and the advertisers that they need to associate with. It's no different today. While some may view this proliferation of consumer electronics devices as disruptive and threatening to traditional media businesses, we view them as additive, opportunities to be seized, new marketplaces to be discovered, created, and conquered. There's truly opportunity and chaos. For our entire 130 years, the economic foundation of our business has been advertising. Display ads and classified advertising in our newspapers, 30-second, 60-second spots on our TV stations and our cable networks, those will account for 80% of our company's total revenues this year. So-called traditional advertising has been and continues to be the primary source of support for a very profitable business model. and one that we rely on to sustain our business for the benefit of all our various shareholders. You know, that's not easy to say, though, that we're oblivious to changing market forces. We are not. Far from it. I think it's fair to say that we've done a pretty good job anticipating changes in advertising and marketing trends that have paralleled the changing habits of media consumers. With the launch of HGTV in 1994, we were anticipating advertiser demand to reach a more defined and engaged audience. The proliferation of cable TV channels provided us with the opportunity to deliver niche television programming that was targeted to viewers with very specific passions and interests. If you were the advertising director at Home Depot or Lowe's, you couldn't wait to buy advertising on HGTV because, as the advertising world said, it's the right sets of butts in the seats. These are motivated viewers who actually will come into our store and buy products, and therefore we're willing to pay more for those targeted consumers that you reach. The strategy worked. Advertisers responded, and today Scripps Cable Networks is a $1 billion-a-year business. Now, to tell you how quickly things change, it took Scripps 114 years to make our first $1 billion in revenue, and it's taken the cable networks 12 years. Advertisers are now, though, even demanding more, and the word is accountability. As media becomes increasingly interactive, especially on the internet, our advertising customers are wanting more proof that they're getting a return on the marketing dollars that they spend. It's kind of the holy grail. Remember the old line? I know 50% of my advertising works, I just don't know which 50%. Well, today, our good friends just down the street from us in Cincinnati at Procter & Gamble say, no, we have to know 100%, and we need an ROI. We need a return on investment for our advertising dollars. Advertisers see a direct link between their commercial messages and the cash register ringing. The industry is working hard to accommodate that growing expectation. We're developing creative advertising and marketing strategies around all of our online content services. And all of our cable television networks, our newspapers, our TV stations have a presence on the web, and they're offering a growing range of creative, interactive marketing solutions. You know, it's been clear to us for some time now that banner ads and pop-up ads alone just won't get it on the internet. Besides, they're a pain in the neck. I hate them. I don't know about you. We have to do more than just transplant traditional marketing techniques. Instead, we're learning to capitalize on the interactive nature of the web to provide measurable marketing results. And what I mean by that is, if you're watching an on-demand show, let's say you download and you want to watch a show about bath design because you happen to be thinking about redesigning your bath. If an advertisement for Kohler comes on, you don't necessarily view that as an advertisement. That's information, because you may be in the market for a sink. So if we can give you more information through that show, you don't view it necessarily as an interruption. You view it as additive. And it's we move in this direction. We're truly learning to capitalize, but we have a long way to go. The internet sites that we've developed around our traditional media businesses, as great as they are, will only generate about 5% of our company's total revenue this year, which is about what our industry peers are averaging. Now, even though we're all aggregating millions of unique visitors a month at our websites, there remains a considerable disparity between the earnings power of our online and traditional media platforms. No doubt the day will come when we reach some level of equilibrium, but my bet is we won't get there with the traditional advertising model. When we're able to show advertisers categorically that we're getting a return on the money they're spending on internet marketing, then we'll be talking. And then we'll see possibly a major shift from traditional advertising models more to internet models. One area of the internet that's already happening, and you can see it daily, is general and specialized search. How many of you have actually gone and used Google in the last, well, just about everybody has? You also have to be careful about talking about trends. A few years ago, when Google was just starting, I went to one of my friends, forgetting he's not in the business. And I said, Harry, by the way, is your wife Google lately? He said, how dare you ask that question? He said, besides, what's Googling? Google truly is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's it's very successful, you know, when your brand becomes a verb, and that's what it's being referred to. But there's also a growing marketplace in specialized search, which is an area that we've had considerable interest in at Scripps for some years now. In fact, in the past 18 months, we've invested almost $1 billion to add two promising and profitable specialized search businesses to our portfolio. I mentioned them earlier, Shopzilla and U-Switch. Shopzilla is the leading comparison shopping site in the United States for products, and U-Switch is the top search site in the United Kingdom for essential home services. Now, like all of our media businesses, both create a marketplace for merchants by aggregating tons of useful information for consumers. The difference is that merchants who use these new media services today only pay for qualified leads that we send their way, called pay-per-click. It's a highly efficient model that gets a lot closer to that holy grail model that advertisers are seeking. We actually view our foray into specialized search as the next stage in our company's continuing evolution. As we see it, prospering in today's changing media environment is a matter of anticipating what direction media consumers and advertising dollars are headed, and then trying to get out in front of those trends. But the real power is in the hands of media consumers. You, everybody in this room, you will be the ones deciding the future of media by your usage. We, as media consumers, have a voracious appetite for news and information and entertainment in all forms. And as the world becomes more digitized, more interactive, our expectations grow. Imagine now how technologically impatient we are. You remember the World Wide Web when you had dial-up? That awful noise? And now, if you can't download something instantly, or your cell phone doesn't immediately have a signal, your BlackBerry doesn't work, you become technologically impatient. The world keeps moving faster. And at Scripps, we're doing all we can just to sometimes run in place. Again, I want to thank you for allowing me to come and spend some time with you today. It's been a great pleasure. You've been very kind and generous to let me stand on and wind about the media world. It's a fascinating world, and it's affecting us every day in so many ways. Thank you again, and I'll be happy to take any questions, I guess.
Ken, thank you for a wonderful description of the media world of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. We've got a couple of books on this community that we'll present to you, one on Marco Island, the other on Naples, so you can think about this sunny world when you go back to Cincinnati.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And
it.
Alan will present the questions.
Ken, we probably should get John Fish and Phil Lewis, the editor of the Daily News, up here because a lot of the questions relate to the local paper. But I'm going to hold a couple of those until a little later because I want to keep people anticipating. This first question is from a student. What are you doing to capture a young audience? And if not, what are you going to try to do about it?
Well, actually, it's a great question because as a company like ours, we have to be concerned about the next level of reader, watcher, user. If we truly think our children are not going to be as heavy newspaper readers as our generation, where are they going to be turning to? So what we're doing is continuing to develop programming on all of our cable networks, but it's more internet related. We're doing very short form programming that just goes out and out of mobile phones. I think for myself, you know, until the mobile phone screen gets a little larger, I've got to either get some new reading glasses. But for younger eyes, they're able to watch video on phones like we never could, and they take them. They separate the platform from content where they go. Imagine if you're walking around a grocery store, you'd like to download Rachel Ray's recipe from last night and see how she prepared it as you're in the grocery store. So we're creating content more for this generation, but it's a different model. It's not necessarily going to appear on television screens. It's more likely to appear on computers, cell phones, and more wireless devices.
Well, given that, the next question, also from a student, what is the educational qualification you're looking for a reporter?
Well, obviously, our standards are much higher than they were in Horton's day. Actually, he's a Yale grad, and he reminded me of it constantly. no, actually, it's a great question because Many of us, and you know, Alan, as does Corbin, many of our great reporters didn't necessarily all come out of journalism schools. I think a great reporter today has to have an incredible curiosity about life in general, not just individual categories, and go out and ask questions and seek answers and seek, if you will, information. Obviously, we like to see any of our employees have as much education as they possibly can have, but I think no different from an athlete or a gifted individual, great reporters are sometimes born. And they're not necessarily always the ones that come out of Big J journalism schools, but we encourage them to get as much education as possible.
This is on a student question card. This is a Forum Club member who understands that student questions get asked first, but then at the bottom, he says, "I am old," at the bottom, so he must not be a student.
Right.
What do you think about the program American Idol as a serious media? Is this trash or something worth watching? I am old and I watch it.
Well, obviously, I don't think it's trash if you watch it. No, I think American Idol is kind of interesting. You know, for those of us who have been around a while, remember the Ted Mack Amateur Hour? I mean, there were amateurs that would come on and sing and dance or whatever. This is just kind of a modern-day version of it. This year is interesting. They're kind of continually raising the bar and trying to stir it up more, and so, gosh, this year are they meaner, the judges and whatnot. But actually, at the end of the day, it's a real form of interactivity. A lot of people watch just so they can vote and determine the winner. And that's a big part interactive of that show. No, it's a reflection a little bit of America. It's a window to our world. You could argue, is it great television or just great entertainment? But from the sheer ratings alone, there's a lot of people watching it. So, and I think single-handedly is kind of holding up the Fox network. My theory is, you know, whatever you want to do in your own living room, whatever you want to watch, that's up to you. And then just insert parental guidance if you have children.
This one is one of many on the subject, but you mentioned in your talk the pressure to rise above the din. And that seems to put, this questioner says, too much pressure on truth and responsible reporting. Your comment.
Well, I don't think you can put too much pressure on truth and responsible reporting. I mean, as I said in my remarks, the one thing I think we have as traditional media companies, at least we try to always have, is the trust of the reader, of the viewer, the end user. And once that goes away, I think we can become irrelevant very quickly. I know from Corbin, you, John, the people in our newspaper company, we work at it every day to get it right. And that's our charge. And, you know, every once in a while, you don't. And there are corrections. And the corrections are never as big as the story on the front page that broke them. We understand that. But still, you know, I think there's a place in American society for this kind of journalism. And the pressure is there and will be there. The one thing we try to preach a lot at Scripps is integrity, and that's across our entire company. There are very few media companies that have the wholesome family programming that we do. One thing we're noted for, probably more than Home and Garden and food, is the National Spelling Bee. It's a nonprofit part of our organization, 75 years old, and it's now been discovered after 75 years in primetime television. These great young people coming on and really showing what I think is one of the great sides of this country, and that is smart young people. And we don't see enough of that. We've got enough athletes. Let's highlight some other young people who are working hard, studying hard on learning education and learning words and learning language better. So, you know, it kind of runs through the company. We get it wrong every once in a while, Alan. You know, that's why I was an eraser on the other end of the pencil. But more times than not, I think we get it right.
Some of these questioners might disagree, and I'll pass some of those on to John Fish.
Yeah, give those to Fish.
This one, there are a number of questions on this subject. What is your view on the way the media are presenting a quote, distorted view, unquote, of the Iraqi war?
Who? Well, it's really interesting because I've been involved in so many discussions like this, and I'm sure many of you in the room have. Some of you have relatives or young ones who are over there, and the one thing that always hit me was a lot of the soldiers who would either come back or we talked to over there that say, We don't understand. We're here, and we can watch. You know, we forget they can watch the news there. They all have satellite downloads where they can watch CNN and Fox and everything else. And we'll do 8 great things. You know, we'll save some local school kids, or we'll try to help these people get power and water. And we turn on, and all we see is this view of the war from the media's perspective. I think, Alan, and you know, you're a war reporter, it's very challenging sometimes to get the right stories back through the editing process, where what finally ends up on the screen is the story it started out to be. It's not easy. And the fog of war, and this one in particular, I was just at an AP board meeting yesterday where we passed a resolution to memorialize a young photographer who just lost his life 3 days before, who was shooting photos for the AP to get information back where we could see. And you probably saw in the paper, there's been over 80 casualties of journalists in this war. It's a really challenging task, and I wish we had a better answer, and I had a better answer for you today. We have to keep working hard and better at it, but war reporting is, it's no different when Ernie Pyle was doing it in World War II. It's challenging at best, and sometimes the reporter's interpretation in the fog of battle doesn't always get put on the page or the screen properly. There's some challenges.
Along that line, and this is just a quick aside, one questioner wanted to know whether Al Jazeera in English is a refreshing source of news. He thinks it is.
Well, as I mentioned in my comments, I think one of the things we as Americans need to do more, it's just a personal observation, is look beyond our borders and look beyond our own news gathering information. Sometimes we don't always agree with it. You may watch a BBC report, or you may watch something from another country and dismiss it out of hand. We live, no question, in the greatest country in the world, but sometimes we get a little lazy as far as looking at the viewpoint from the other side. And I think as a country, we're beginning to experience some of that now and some of the pushback we're getting around the world as far as the perception of America. So it's up to us as Americans not just to depend on our government, but to move beyond and look at other sources. The great thing about the Internet is you can pretty much go and find out any information you want. You can go to the Internet today and search out the top paper in Tel Aviv and find out from that viewpoint what might be reported different out of Lebanon. We have that opportunity. And you know, this is a country where we're free to make our own decisions. So I would encourage you to do more of that.
There are a number of questions like this one, Ken. My wife reads every letter to the editor every day. How many people do that?
Our statistics say not that many. And by that I mean people who actually read the paper, how many read letters to the editor. In some cases we've seen some increases because people are now starting, and this is back to the citizen journalism and where you're publishing, and now we're seeing things like people actually saying, okay, if I can't get a reporter out to write about this stop sign that's been down for 2 weeks, I'll just take a shot on my digital camera phone here and I'll publish it myself. So we're seeing more and more of an activist role. I don't know, John, do you think there's any pickup in letters to the editor reading? Do you get more than you used to, less?
We did a study about a year and a half ago. And
quickly, come on up, John, so they can hear you. They won't be able to hear from there. This is John Fish, publisher of the Daily News.
I hope this is the only question I have to answer, Alan. We did a study about a year and a half ago and found that we run more letters to the editor in the Naples Daily News than any paper in the country. And I've told several groups, and some of you have probably heard me say this, that's a reflection of this community. I think we have a lot of very opinionated folks that like to share those opinions. And I think that's great for our newspaper. And I think your wife is one of many in this community that reads every letter to the editor. Many of you have told me that it's some of the your favorite pages in our paper. And I'm curious, would you raise your hands if that's the case, if you read a lot of the letters? Yeah. So we will continue to run letters to the editor.
This is a question that has to do with the Internet, Ken, and not everybody in this crowd is as happy about the Internet opportunity as you are. There are a whole series of questions. Was it a corporate decision or local to drop full financial stock tables and mutual funds from the business sections, and are you listening to the letters to the editor?
No, I can tell you, and Alan, I hope, would back me up, as would Corbin. Old man E.W. Scripps used to say, independence in all things. And he was a big believer in a newspaper in Naples or Knoxville, Tennessee, cannot be run from Cincinnati. And I assure you, while we have opinions and observations from Cincinnati, the paper is run here locally. That's just a judgment balance of, and by the way, this kind of discussion is going on in most every community, of taking now, stock quotes, which are available in so many other areas, and maybe opening that space up for things that might be of more useful information to the reader. I just spent last weekend with my dad railing about this in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, because the journal's taken out the stock quotes and he doesn't like it because he doesn't want to go on the Internet and he doesn't have a PDA. It's a tough call. Is that fair, John? Is there anything else to add to it? But again, it's part of this change, if you will, that's going on. And also, quite honestly, in the constraints of economics and business and in trying to save some costs here and there, those decisions factor into it, too. I wouldn't hide behind an editorial decision.
Let me give you a chance to have a commercial for the new plant that you're building here in Naples. It says, this town, Naples, has a great number of Ivy League graduates, but we can never get any information on Saturday's football games in the Sunday paper. You can see there's a fair reaction to that, but the real opportunity, I think, is to, because the paper's grown so much and outgrown its capacity, this gives you an opportunity to talk about the new plant for the Naples Daily News.
Well, we're thrilled. We're thrilled to be able to build a new plant here for the paper, and I know many of you have actively been involved. I've received letters and emails from many of you about this whole process, and at one point it was going down this road, and fortunately we ended up in the right spot. But it's a major investment, over $90 million. And I think it underscores, from our company's standpoint, I've talked a lot about Internet, and yet, you know, this is a plant that will be state-of-the-art that will make our paper so much more improved in so many technological areas, including the ability to get more put into the paper. That's one of the problems now. This great community kind of outgrew our capacity. We had great hopes for Naples when we bought this paper. We had no idea that this community was going to become really what we think is the great city of the state of Florida and really in the southeast. So we're catching up. That's part of the problem. The other part of that is we're seeing more and more people who are not going to wait for Sunday morning to get a score. They'll turn to ESPN or go online. So it's a fine balance, again, of, you know, how much information you can put that's now dated versus maybe a bigger story on the actual game.
Thank you all for coming today. I'm going to let you remember that in 2 weeks, be back here for Susan Line. And we really appreciate Mr. Lowe's joining us today.
Thank you.